everyone. Thank you so much for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and just when it thinks life is over, it reforms into the butterfly. And yet, that isn't enough. It still has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough to take it everywhere it's going to go once it gets out of the cocoon. And while I can't imagine that any of that is easy, neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And I have Kelly Stannert joining me today, and she has a beautiful little boy that she is going to share his story. And I know that you will be inspired and encouraged and motivated to bust through your own limits just based on his story. So, Kelly, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you.
So how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We just had a weekend where we helped our daughter move into her new home. So that's exciting. Your little ones, don't blink, because they'll be adults and doing adult things before you realize anything. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into Caden's story.
So my name is Kelly. I was a special ed teacher for 11 years. Yay. And now I am a stay-at-home mom, mostly due to what Caden requires. It just wouldn't make sense for not only daycare and the cost of that, but he would also need a home health nurse. My husband is an ER nurse, so luckily,
wow, awesome.
We kind of, as much as parents can know what to do for their kid,
sure,
we try to be as prepared. So I'm loving life as a stay-at-home mom. It's very hard, definitely a lot harder than I thought it would be. I have a 3-year-old daughter, then my son Caden, and we are expecting a little girl in September. So,
fantastic! Congratulations!
Yeah. Thank you.
Very cool. Yeah. And based on it, there's a tiny bit of an accent. I'm guessing that you're from like Wisconsin, Minnesota, somewhere up there.
Actually, I'm from Illinois.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that a lot, though, that it sounds really like Wisconsin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah. We have lots of family in Wisconsin, and you say a few little sounds that sound very similar to the way that they say it in Wisconsin. So maybe it's they've come down to Illinois and you've been converted that way somehow. Who knows?
Oh my gosh.
So, very exciting to have two and one on the way. And so let's just talk a little bit about your special education experience first, and that will give a little bit more background and help some people maybe understand once we get more into Caden's story.
Yeah. So when I first started, I actually was a Kines major. So I did PE for 3 years. But ended up going back to school. Those 3 years, I worked at a special ed co-op in Chicago. And so I did the PEL program, PE classes, absolutely fell in love with the SPED community. So I ended up going back to school and got my special ed degree and became a classroom teacher then for 7 years. And I taught what's called CIPS. It's Crisis Intervention and Program Stabilization. So a lot of my students were behavioral and emotional disorder. And I did work with the older group. So my kids were 16 to 21, but we were a self-contained classroom. My kids were in and out of prison. So it was a lot of, a lot of focus on behavioral stuff.
Right.
So obviously Caden, as much as I could possibly be prepared, I was not, because as you know, the SPED community is very large and we Yes. There's a lot of different specialties within that. So
yes, absolutely.
So that's
yeah. And so by the time, yeah, by the time he reaches, you know, 15 or 16, then, you know, you'll have some, then yeah. you're, then those experiences that you had, but also just the fact that you taught PE, and you have that move, I'm going to call it a movement degree, yeah. because that, you know, kinesis, that's what it is. So, yep. So, you know, there's a lot of things that even now and prior to as old as he is now, which he's what, 18, 20 months, somewhere in there.
He just turned 20 months. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was trying to think like doing the math from when we first started talking about having you on, yeah. how old he was to getting you here now. It's like, okay, I think that's about right. So there's a lot of movement things that you're able to do with him because you have that different background.
Yeah.
So, I just kind of want to give, you know, as much of that sort of umbrella idea of you and bringing all of that experience. And I mean, the fact that your husband is an ER nurse. And so obviously lots of medical knowledge there, which I have a yeah. feeling is going to also be important for Caden's care as we talk about yes. this. So go ahead and if you want to now, tell yeah. us more about Caden and his diagnosis and all of the things that go along with that.
So with Caden, I'll take you guys back to the very beginning. My pregnancy with Caden was pretty emotionally and mentally draining and hard as any parent who receives news. I was at my 12-week scan. We found out that his NT was about a 5, which typically 1 to 3 is normal. So they knew something was going on. They wanted to get genetic okay. testing. But before I could do the first set of genetic testing, we were told that Caden was most likely a trisomy baby. I wouldn't necessarily be able to carry him to term and just a lot of, you know, heartbreaking things that parents don't want to hear.
Right. And I'm going to pause for, if that's okay. Yeah. Can I pause you for just a second? Okay. Cause it cut out for me. I don't know if it cut out for everybody else, but you were at your what week visit when you got this news?
The 12 weeks.
Okay. Okay. And then what does NT stand for?
The nucleal translucency. So it's like okay. the fluid in the back of your brain. Typically, it is very high with some type of genetic disorder. Down syndrome is a big one where that's kind of the first indicator that parents know something's going on. Or it could be in a heart disease as well. So after that scan, we were immediately sent to MFM, which is maternal fetal medicine doctor, who you go to with high risk pregnancies. And when we went there, we were told just, you know, all the possibilities. So, of course, you let your head get to places you don't want it to be. Yep. But then we did the first set of genetic testing, and that came back inconclusive. So, you know, my head was spinning. It was
right.
It was terrible. And then we did it again for a second time, and everything came back normal. So, you know, you thought you could like breathe a little bit.
Sure.
And then the 20-week anatomy scan came. And I don't know if it was just like blissful ignorance that I'm like, oh, genetically things are good. I didn't even take into account deformities. Mm-hmm. So we found out that Caden had a pretty severe cleft lip and palate, as well as a heart. He had an anomaly. At first, they thought it was a hole in his heart. Then we were told it was just bilateral SVCs, which he does have. Think of like the tubes that go in your heart. You only have the one on the right side. Well, Caden has one on both sides. And in Down syndrome, it's typical just to have it on the left side. So that's what Caden has. And then he also, oh my gosh, there's a few things going on with his heart. He has a aortic anomaly. So I know my husband's a lot better with the language for that one, but yeah. But getting to that later, that's where it stopped. And that's what we thought Kaden had after the anatomy scan. So I kept going to the cardiologist. And for him, they have a fetal one. So we kind of monitored it. And they're like, you know what? It should be okay. I have like high hopes. It's just how Kaden's body's going to function. Well, when Kaden was born, there were a lot more things going on than we initially thought. So the heart ended up being, he had a massive PDA. The cardiac surgeon actually said it was one of the largest he had seen. So instead of going to the cath lab, he had open heart surgery at 1 week old. And and then... So there was that. But then we found out Kaden, when he was trying to make noise, it kind of sounded like a whimpering puppy when they're first born. Mm-hmm. So we knew something was different or off. And the NICU, they checked a couple times. It turned out Kaden had vocal cord paralysis as well as tracheal and laryngeal malacia. So yeah, so the malacia is what makes him sound like he has no voice. And mm-hmm. then the paralysis, the vocal cord paralysis, is what makes it very difficult to swallow. So because of that, Kaden was aspirating and desatting in the NICU. So we knew he had to get a G-tube. Mm-hmm. And so we had that surgery a week after the heart. And wow. That's probably the hardest part after just having a baby, is realizing that not all children eat the same, and right. just having to reteach yourself and your family, like, okay, this is how Kaden is going to eat right now. And so we went that route. And then we found out Kaden has multiple midline defects as well. So just to give an example, besides the throat and the heart, his kidneys did have some, they were very small masses on it. We're still just watching it. He's closely monitored, but then he has things like his little testes are still undescended. So that's another surgery. His left eye does not have a tear duct. So that's another thing getting done. Mm-hmm. And then we found out his hearing. Originally, we were told he was completely deaf. He failed all of the hearing tests. But then, miraculously, after his first surgery, he had 90% hearing back with wow. the first set of ear tubes. Yeah, so it's just that's how much fluid was built up in there. So he's had a lot. We've already done 4 surgeries. His 5th surgery is scheduled for the summer. So he gets a lot done at one time. So that part's right. kind of tough. But his cleft lip and palate are great. It's navigated a little differently because Kaden doesn't eat like a typical child. Mm-hmm. But we are working on it. He's reached a point where he can now eat pureed food, which is amazing. He can't drink liquids yet, but we're in speech therapy twice a week as OT, developmental, PT twice a week. So those are the main ones. But then we also are dealing with, he has severe hypotonia. So with hypotonia, that's just when your body is, think of kind of like floppy, and it's really hard to hold yourself up, to stand, to walk. So Kaden is delayed in that aspect. He actually learned to crawl right after Christmas, which was huge. And then all of a sudden in the last 4.5-5 months, he has learned to stand up on his own. He is starting to bear walk. Yeah, yeah. It's even in his little gait trainer, he's starting to like move with the therapist. I mean, Kaden is doing amazing things that we were originally told he would never do. So it's hard, but also I've learned, and if I had any advice to tell people, especially those that are in the NICU and dealing with diagnosis right off the bat and worrying like, what if, we did not get a diagnosis right away because everything had come back normal, in utero. So obviously we did multiple genetic testing after he was born, everything from the different blood works, the cheek swab, they pulled follicles, everything. A lot of it came back normal. And then finally, we got a diagnosis of something called TRAP. It's TRRAP syndrome. And Caden is only one of 48 ever documented with it. Wow. And Caden too is very... He's very different when you compare to other kids with TRAP. Usually there are some kids with TRAP that have severe, severe medical complexities who are blind, deaf, trached. They have a very hard time with things. And then the other spectrum of that is autism. And most of the kids with TRAP are autistic and have... There's a specific genetic code for that, which when being tested, Caden did not carry that one. And he was the only one with his specific splice in the gene. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to compare him to any of the other kids, which there's so little amount of people worldwide with it. Right. So,
right. So that's one of 48 worldwide.
Yes, ever documented. Wow. That they know of. And I think it is something that is coming out to be more, or at least tested more, because in the last 3 years, we were told, there were like another 7 or 8 people diagnosed. So I'm sure this is something that has been around, just never.
Right.
They really wanted to put Caden in a category of Down syndrome, and they thought for sure he was going to be at least mosaic. Just because he has that left palm crease, the straight line, his features are similar to that. But everything came back normal, and it was hard because you're playing a guessing game, and then you're listening to doctors make comments that they shouldn't be making. We'll leave it at that. And told our child would never walk, never talk, never eat normal, not be able to interact with us. And it's heartbreaking, especially when you're postpartum and you're worried about your son going through different surgeries. And then, you know, we had our daughter who was 18 months at the time, and it was very, very hard to navigate through. And every time we went to a visit for the NICU after visits for that first year, we would keep hearing from the doctors, I can't believe he can do this. I can't believe he can do that. I can't believe. And it's incredible the limits that people put on somebody not knowing what could happen, you know, and it's not fair to the parents or the family, because you automatically go into something with an idea like, oh my gosh, my child will never be able to do this, this, or this. So we celebrate the little things that other people are like, you know, oh, well, they usually stand up around, you know, 10 to 12 months or do this. And Caden was 18 months. But for us, it was like, oh my gosh, he stood up, you know?
Right.
He still cannot talk. And that's okay. We're working on it. The malicious are getting better. He can definitely scream now. So that's great for Caden. But gosh, he interacts, especially with my daughter, his big sister, like a typical child would. And the developmental therapist cannot believe where he's at developmentally. I think she said he's only delayed by 1 month developmentally, which is incredible. Wow. And that's like typically seen in just a typical child.
Right.
But as far as obviously physicality, speech, all that, we are pretty delayed, but Caden is making strides that nobody predicted he would by now. So it's incredible.
That sounds, I'm going to let you take a breath. That does sound like an incredibly emotional journey to be on for both you and your husband individually, but definitely as a couple. And then as parents, and to have, you know, as you said, his big sister, 18, I guess they're about 18 months apart. Yes. And so, you know, just trying to get all of that, you know, navigating as well. What sort of supports, I mean, I know you said all the different therapists, but what sort of supports from family and friends do you and your husband have? That's something that I often think gets ignored because, well, we just don't have time to take care of ourselves because we have all of these other things. So, you know, family, friends, your own therapist, what sort of help do you have for yourselves?
So we have a very good support system on both sides of our family. My mom herself is actually a CVU nurse. So luckily we have a couple medical people to kind of help with that. But what's difficult and people don't understand when you have a medically complex child is it's not as easy to say, hey, can we just find a babysitter so that, you know, we can go out for dinner or do this? Unfortunately, we have to worry about, okay, well, do you know how to work the pump? Do you know how to put this into the G button? Do you know how to feed them? Do you know what happens if, like, there's signs of aspiration? Mm-hmm. So in that aspect, I wouldn't say the taking care of ourselves is as much as it used to be, where like we could go out and be like, okay, I need a couple hours to myself, do this, do that, where we can do it together and rely on other people. So right now, my husband, Paul, and I try to give each other some time to go, like for me, just to go grocery shopping by myself right now, which I know there's many parents out there who are like, that is not a relaxing time. And it's not, but it's a nice way to be by yourself sometimes when I know he's at home watching the kids. And, you know, vice versa, if he wants to, or if there's friends or something and you plan a dinner or something. But luckily, we are getting to that point where at least my, his mom, my mom, and my sister, we have taught to use the pump. So just in case emergencies happen or whatever, we need other people to learn. But I mean, you know, nowadays everybody still works. So it's hard. Yeah. But I do, which I am not ashamed of or embarrassed of or anything. I, especially since Kaden, I do see a therapist. I try to go twice a month. Now it's typically once a month, but that alone has helped me so much to navigate through how my life is. And, you know, the not so nice comments that sometimes people make. And even if they don't mean it, which I'm sure a lot of people don't mean in a malicious way by any means, but it's hard when, you know, people make comments like, oh, it must be hard to have a normal life. You know, it's, yeah, but you learn there's different normals for everybody. And this is our normal. So, and it just, as a parent, it breaks your heart because you don't want your child to hear those comments or to think that they're any less than someone else. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We're still in the thick of it with little ones. So it's hard to get out.
Yeah. And your story is very, very similar to one of the chapters in my book. And the story is Kathleen's story. And she's 22, almost 23 now. And when she was born, they did not know ahead of time that she would have the cleft lip and the cleft palate. Mm-hmm. And when she was born, the mom said there was silence in the delivery room. And the nurse who was up, I think she had to have a C-section, or I can't remember now how the birth happened, but anyway, there was a nurse nearby, and she said the look on the nurse's face was one of terrified and shock and almost disbelief. And finally, someone in the room said, "Oh, well, the mom found out she had a girl and then has a cleft lip and palate." And that was like hardly the only words that were spoken the whole time. And of course, then they, you know, took the baby off and, you know, started doing the testing and all the things. But what sort of reaction? Hopefully it was better than that when Caden was born.
Yeah. You know, I couldn't really tell you as far as, because I have a medical condition where I have to have general anesthesia for my C-sections. So unfortunately I don't get to be awake and my husband doesn't get to be with me. So that part's hard, but my husband did get to see him immediately. They sent him up to the NICU with him within like 30 minutes while I was still in surgery. And at that point, you know, there's only the one NICU nurse and the doctor that was talking with Paul, and our team knew everything beforehand as far as cleft lip and palate. So I think the shock of looking at a baby with cleft lip and palate, because it's extremely different, especially for people who don't know or have experienced it themselves, babies are very swollen when they're born. And so when you're cleft lip and palate, everything is very swollen on the face. So, I mean, everybody was very kind to us at that, with that aspect. I think it's some of the other stuff that we had more difficulty with people not understanding, you know, thinking Caden's okay. He has no voice, but, oh, that's okay. It'll come in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so you find yourself having to advocate for your child, like, this is not normal. You know, or why is his heart rate dropping when he's drinking? And it took a lot of different doctors clashing with each other to finally get, not answers, but things that we needed done for Caden.
Right. Yeah. And I think I have gleaned from the parents that I have worked with over the years. So, I mean, you can kind of see behind me, you know, that I am also a teacher, and I was a special ed teacher, which was why the cheering at the beginning. And so many of the parents that I spoke with often talked about the fact that, and then when I interviewed parents for the book as well, they spoke of the fact that you have to, basically from the time you get the diagnosis, whether that's in utero or at birth or sometime later on, you have to defend your child's right to be alive.
Yeah.
Is that something that you're feeling?
You know what? Not as much now. And I think that has a big part with how I've learned to cope in my own way as a parent and learn what advocating really means for your child. But at first, yes, it's, you know, I felt like I had to constantly defend, especially when little comments are made here or there, like that Caden has every right to be here and he was made this way for a reason. In our eyes, Caden's perfect in our eyes. We know he has a lot of health issues, but I mean, it's no different than looking at your child when they smile and go to hug you, and why would you think that's any different for a child that might physically look different or act different? It's just hard, especially for parents, like you said, who feel as if they need to defend their child in every aspect, because it's not fair.
Yeah. And I know that I should not assume, because, you know, the whole saying of what happens if you assume, but I am going to assume that throughout your pregnancy, you were offered the option of termination. not once, but multiple times. Am I correct? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, several people in the book and several families that I've known over the years, if they got their diagnosis or even the potential diagnosis in utero, it was multiple times that they were offered termination. Mm-hmm. And they had to turn it down every single time. And I don't know if that is something that the medical community requires as a sort of a safety precautionary, you know, we don't want to be sued later on because we didn't offer this kind of step. Or if the doctors really believe that it would be better. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine being offered that. I mean, once, okay. But then like successive visits for 3, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 times.
Yeah. It was heartbreaking. And like you said, just to constantly feel like judged almost. Like, wow, you're going to have a child with, and we didn't even know everything Caden had. We had just thought he had the cleft lip palate and then the heart, which in my mind was like, why is that even a question, you know, right. Or something that you continue to ask me. And I can understand without getting into, there's no politics, no nothing here, but it might have been a different conversation if it was something so much more severe where it affected me, my child, like in how right. we were going to make it through. But yeah, after we found out, like you said, it was probably 4 or 5 times we were asked if we wanted to terminate. And that was all the way up until like 24 weeks. So yeah. it was a lot. And then we've also had comments made to us by friends and even family that, you know, if they had a child with things, they would choose not to have them, which is everybody has their right. And for us, it's more or less, it's hurtful because it's almost like you're saying things like, well, you chose to have Caden. Why would you do that? You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think he's doing great. Our normal doesn't look, you know, normal or typical, but it is for us. And we go through our day no different than if you had to feed your child, you know, applesauce or whatever you're making them for right. lunch. And Caden just eats differently. That's all.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, and you had mentioned this before, that sometimes people say things and I don't think intentionally mean them to be hurtful. Mm-hmm. But when they really maybe were to stop and think about the implications of what they are saying, you know, like, yeah. I don't know how you do it. You know, that could be sometimes like, oh, I would never do that, or I could never do that. You know, but to say like, yeah, no, I would have, had I known if that would have been my child, then we would have taken a different option.
Yeah.
And I don't think they mean that negatively, but if they really stopped and thought about what the implication of what they're saying is, maybe yes. they wouldn't say it. And that's part of why I do this, is because we don't understand, you know, we're not walking in someone else's shoes. And until that story is shared, until that perspective is shared, we might continue to make comments such as those. And hopefully through this episode and others like this episode and my book and other things that I've done, we will be enlightening for others to think about what they're saying, before they say it, or, you know, or just to have a better, those who aren't walking in your shoes will never understand, but we could empathize we could, and I think empathy and sympathy are different. Empathy is I'm trying to understand. I see what you're going through is different than mine, and I want to support you in a way that I can. Where sympathy is, I feel sorry for you. Mm-hmm. That's I don't know if those are technical differences in those two words, but those are my differences for those two words.
No, I would agree with you.
And so, you know, just being able to be empathetic to the fact that what we mentioned before, you can't necessarily find a babysitter. Multiple families in the book, multiple families that I've worked with have said that exact comment. You know, we just can't call up the neighbor kid and say, come on over, you know? And for people to have that understanding and hopefully maybe change their attitude of, well, okay, it might be a little different than what I'm used to, but I could learn how to do a feeding through a G tube. I could learn how to use the G tube pump. I could learn to, you know, the signs for this or that or the other thing. And any stay at home mom of any child will say, yeah, an hour break to go to the grocery store by myself is rejuvenating in a sense, you know? So yeah. Even if it's just for that hour, you know, that you just, the neighbor comes over and learns all the things, you know, just being aware that it's needed. I tend to think that people, because I certainly didn't until I got into the world of special education. I didn't know that families were going through that and that was a difficulty they had. So this is, And as a special ed teacher, I still didn't really get it.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's like you said, the sympathy and empathy. I could empathize with them, but I never understood just what they went through at home. Because, you know, in IEP meetings, we can sit there and we can listen to the parents and their concerns and what's going on at home, where we see the child in a different light in school and can give our opinions on that. But ultimately, these parents are the ones who have to not only deal with everything, but they have to advocate for what they know is best for their child too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you, just as I, can admit as teachers, we only see that glimpse of these students and what they do within a school setting and environment, not what they'll do at home and then for the rest of their lives. So Our goal is to help them accomplish what's best for that. And parents, that's why parents who are super involved are the best, because not only are they advocating, but they're teaching us. And until I had Caden, I had no clue what these families went through at home. No clue. I just knew, oh, they needed a nurse, a one-on-one with them, you know?
Yeah. And in a school setting, you know, we have, it's not just one-on-one, whether that's one-on-one student or, you know, one teacher to it, but we have a whole building of people, you know? So yeah, even though we might have 12 kids in our classroom or 30 kids in our classroom, you know, I mean, in a special ed teachers, we tend not to have the higher numbers like the 30, but our general ed teachers do.
Yeah.
But we still have probably 25 other adults that could give us a 5-minute break, or you know, we are going to have lunch. We are going to have, you know, the kids are going to go home. So we do get to step away from it. And even though the children are at school, so some teachers say, well, the parents get away from it while we have them at school. My understanding now is even when Caden will not be in your sight, you're never not thinking about him.
No. And you need to be ready too for when anything happens. Like, you know, it could be something as silly as him pulling his tube out in school. A parent would have to rush there and either put the new one in, or else you have like a 30 minute to an hour window before it's not good. You know what I mean? Where you're going to the hospital and they're going to have to reinsert things. And I don't know. So it's like, you got to be ready. And then the amount of worry that you have, it's just incredible, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's something that as teachers specifically, because outside of parents, teachers are typically the ones at the school ages that are with the kids the most. And
yeah,
I don't think I, and I'm sure I still don't fully grasp the amount that parents go through and the amount of worry, but just to remember, like you said, like the parents who are involved are the ones that you want, because you want there, you've done all kinds of research, I'm sure, about TRAP that the teachers aren't going to have any inclination about, because it is so rare when he gets into school. And so you are an invaluable resource to them, because you're going to be able to save them hundreds of hours of researching, mm-hmm. because you're already doing it. Yeah. And that's something that I teach my teachers when I do my speakings and my trainings, is we have these parents who know about, yes, all teachers have been trained in autism and ADHD now, but how it presents in a specific child is still, you need that information mm-hmm. from the parent. You know, a very incredibly yeah. rare genetic disorder like Caden has, you're going to have that information, you know? And so being able to share that mm-hmm. with his school team, I mean, that's just, and then trusting you. You know, I always felt like I trusted my parents of my students, but the amount of trust that you have to have in us, we mm-hmm. don't fully comprehend. And I don't know that we ever truly could, but yeah. I don't think we give it the importance that it really deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't faced that yet, but yeah. You haven't faced that from this side of things, but as the parent, as the teacher for students of that before, did you really think about that too much?
No, not you. It's like you said, you just think of, you know, what you're doing for the child in that moment or that year, and what, mm-hmm. especially when it's IEP season and you're just worried about, oh man, what updated goals can I put, you know, and just,
right.
Like you said, trying to help in that sense, but when you don't take that input from parents, or when you have parents that aren't, which I'm sure you deal with, just involved nearly as much, you're guessing. And then some of those could be just like very non-beneficial for the child. And now right. that I think about it and how I'm going to have to, I've got a year left of early intervention before we're in the school system with Caden. And I think about that often, about going to these IEP meetings. And as a teacher, I always made sure that I let my parents know every amazing, wonderful thing that their child can do, and that this does not define them in any way, shape, or form. But not all people are like that. And I've already right. prepared myself to go in here, but I'm nervous that I'm going to be too emotionally invested and not be able to advocate the things I need to. So even though I taught SPED for 11 years and wrote IEPs and held the meetings and everything, I'm probably myself going to need a consultant, you know, and it's right. just, it's things.
I know where you can find one.
Yeah, I know it's, I mean, you have to keep that in mind for real, but it is, it's crazy because you don't think of this stuff until, you know, right. you're really on the other side.
Yeah.
So I totally get it now when parents were very upset because one thing, or maybe they're doing something at home and not doing it at school. And that's the mm-hmm. part that's really hard, because teachers are like, there's no way they're doing it at home. Where I have learned they very well can be. There's so many things he does for us that he will not do for the therapist. And I'm like, right. I promise you, I'm not lying.
Right.
So it's hard.
Yeah. And that's, I'm so glad that you said that, because that is another thing that I teach it. My teachers is, if they can do it for the parents, but they're not doing it for the therapist or at school, or the other way around,
Yeah.
What are the parameters? What's happening in the different environments that they're able to show it in one place, but not the other? And how can we replicate as much as possible the environment where they're doing it? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, I think probably, you know, when he's doing certain things for you that he's not doing for the therapist, he's probably more relaxed and comfortable and not necessarily in the throes of a therapy session when he's with you, and that's why he's able to do the things. But when he's in the throes of a therapy session and the therapist is working him extra hard and he's, you know, it's just this very directed, you know, time period of his day that he has to do certain things, he's not as relaxed, he's not as comfortable. And so maybe some of that's maybe part of the reason. But figuring that out to be able to say, oh, okay, well, if he's doing it in one place and not the other, no matter where the place is that he's doing it and not doing it, how do we replicate it, the environment in both places as much as possible? Mm-hmm. So I think you have a great advantage because you have had that special education experience now. And I think you will be able to be an amazing encourager to other parents, but also to teachers, because you can now say, look, I've walked in both sets of shoes and here are the lessons that I learned. And that's kind of what I do. You know, like I said, when I teach teachers or when I do speaking engagements, it's just, here are some of the things that I thought I was doing well, but realized I could have done them even better. And here are the things I really did horribly and should have done better.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. It's crazy to think back on, like you said, the things I could have done differently. You know, I just didn't know. I was just ignorant to other things that were going on with these kids. And now as a parent, hopefully I can try to advocate kind of knowing like how that whole process goes, which I'm sure they're all going to be like, great, she was a sped teacher. I'm like, oh, you guys really got to work on those IEPs then.
Yeah, exactly. I know how they're supposed to be written. So let's get them written appropriately. So I so appreciate you sharing the journey that you have had in these first 20 months of Caden's life. And I know that he's, you know, going to continue to bust through those limits. And I'm so appreciative of the medical professionals when you have brought him back and they have said, oh, I didn't think he would ever do this. I hope that resonates. I mean, I know they're saying it and this sounds weird to say, I hope that resonates with them that have said this, but I really hope they do. And that, you know, that changes maybe how they approach the next set of parents.
Yep.
So I agree. I know with a lot of the rare genetic disorders, there are support groups. Is there a TRAP support group available?
So there is one that I found. It's on Facebook. There are only 15 of us. And it's so random. I remember finding a Facebook page called Unique Rare Diseases, and they have parents just comment what their child has. And someone from England had reached out that their daughter had it or has it, and was born a month and a half before Caden. So I had become kind of close with her. She invited me to this group that they started. Right now, between the 15 of us, half are in the US and half are in, I think it's just England so far.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. It's very, very weird. So it makes you wonder, like,
right.
But that's this far. And then I did have a woman reach out to me a few months ago who found my information on that Unique Rare Diseases as well. And her son was just diagnosed at, I think he's 5 years old, with TRAP, and had all the similar things as Caden, give or take some differences. As I was saying, Caden's very hard to pinpoint where he lies in it. But she's like, your son looks like my son. And I didn't want to, like, I mean that in the best way, you know. And so I ended up inviting her to this group. And it's pretty amazing to see these moms and what they go through. And a lot of them, they either just have their one child that has TRAP and, you know, life is hard because you have to do, like I said, there's some kids on the spectrum of TRAP that they're just completely medically and physically reliant on someone. So that's an all day thing for these parents. Or right. There's kids that are, you know, doing great physically, especially, and just thriving in a school system, but they might still be nonverbal and have siblings that are helping them through things. Right. So it's very cool to see the different family dynamics with children with this specific one, as I'm sure it is for everybody else who gets different diagnosis and can see. It's not that you're comparing, but it's nice to know you're not alone, you know?
Right. Yeah. And again, that's another statement that I've heard countless times is that the parents of a child who is different, quote unquote, that, you know, when you get your diagnosis for your child or your child is born or whenever you find out that suddenly you're like, oh, well now I don't have anything in common, or I don't have as much in common with my friends as I thought, you know, cause they're not going to understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
And so it does. And you kind of, you know, the more medically complex, I often think too, the smaller that island becomes.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy for you that you have that Facebook group. And that's one of the wonderful things about Facebook is I have found that common thread so often that, oh yeah, I found a group on Facebook. Oh yeah, I found a group on Facebook, you know, that's specifically to my child's diagnosis. And we just get all these things. It seems like every couple months I hear of something different, like, you know, never heard of TRAP. I had a student who had something called GNO. Now I can't remember. One, thought he'd had cerebral palsy until he was like 15 or 16 and went through the genetics testing. And then they found that. And I am kind of wondering about, you know, Kathleen in my book, because a lot of the things that you're speaking of with Caden sound similar to things that she has experienced. I mean, she's had multiple surgeries. She's had heart issues. She's had, you know, all kinds of different things.
And most kids with TRAP do have cleft lip and palate. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not as rare as, you know, it is thought of, you know, hopefully there, it will expand and more people. And, when was TRAP officially a diagnosis in for anybody, but then, you know, I mean, I think you've already told us for Caden.
Honestly, I couldn't tell you the year it was found. Obviously, even just testing for it must be pretty soon. Yeah. Like within, I would say probably the last 15, 20 years, but every kid in this TRAP group, the oldest is 16 years old and they didn't get a diagnosis till a little later too. So I don't have anything to compare to older. But like you said, I'm sure it's something that is it's got to be out there way more than what we know or what's even being tested for. And they just assumed, well, this child has mosaic Downs or, you know, this child is just total midline defect without.
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting how it all works. And honestly, it took us how many genetic tests to find out. And I know not everybody is able to do that. We were blessed with pretty good insurance and we knew it would cost us a certain amount, and it's just something that we are living with that decision to do. But a lot of parents don't have the capability to do that.
Definitely. And hopefully having that specific diagnosis, you know, will lead to more specific treatments. But at the same time, if your child is getting services, hopefully it's, you know, whatever their eligibility for those services, it's still productive for them and not detrimental for them to have the services without having that final official genetic or whatever, correct diagnosis. Yes. Kelly, do you encourage people to follow you on social media at all? Do you talk about Caden's story, or do you prefer that people kind of go to those other Facebook groups?
I know my stuff is on private, but I definitely accept different friends that are interested in hearing or learning about Caden. I do share his story as much as possible. Just on little things like big gains, such as when he can stand up, you know, or he's playing with his sister. So in that way I do, but I really like the other groups because it's not that I'm not comfortable with sharing a lot about Caden, but as a lot of other parents too, I found that they're making specific Facebook pages or Instagrams for their child so people can follow, which is something I might do just to, it's not that it's so much you're worried about privacy. You're worried about people sometimes on social media can be cruel too. So
yes,
it's important for me in my mental health to make sure that it's people I know are going to be there just to support Caden, not to have comments. Yeah. So yeah, I'm
absolutely
still navigating that part.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just, if there was something that you wanted me to share for people to follow you, then I wanted to do that. But I don't want to do that if that's not something that you're ready for yet. And I totally understand that and appreciate that. We just have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that you want to, any final comments that you want to share?
Well, there's two things I would tell parents who are going through a similar thing. One for the NICU, do not listen to the residents. And if residents are going to talk about what they think something is, ask them to leave the room. You have every right and you don't need to listen to that stuff. Because I'm telling you, 95% of the time, they are completely off base and it's going to cause excess anxiety for no reason. Okay. And then the second part is to learn to have your own little fun when it comes to going to all the pediatric appointments and filling out the paperwork, because those questions can get very exhausting for parents who know their child is not reaching a certain limit. So when they say things like, does your child interact with other children normally, or do you have concerns, all that, I've learned to start writing like, no, but we're on top of it, or drawing little pictures, you know, or putting like a silly face for some stuff. Cause it's little things like that I don't think people understand. It mentally affects the parents. Like, we already know our kids can not do certain things right now, but to keep having to reiterate it and, you know, talk about it constantly with different doctors, it's nice to sometimes just put a fun spin on it for yourself and just learn to, you know, go with the flow, be like, yep.
That's awesome. That's not a tip that's been shared before. And I very much appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. Your mental health is very affected by everything, and whatever you can do to bring yourself a tiny bit of joy. And that is something too, that I have spoken to my teachers about over the years, because I've had parents tell me like, I don't want to hear the test scores. I know that my child struggles. Don't tell me, you know, that they're just, if there's any way you don't have to put that in their IEP, then don't even put it in there, because I already know that. I don't need you to tell me that.
Yeah.
So just, you know, keeping that in mind as well. It's been such a delight to speak to you, and I so appreciate you sharing your story today, and I wish you all the best. And I look forward to, over the years, learning about even more limits that Caden is busting through and how he is becoming the beautiful butterfly that he will become as a grown person. And for everyone else, thank you for joining. Please let us know if you have any questions, put them in the chat. If you're watching this in the replay, I will make sure, if I can't answer them, that I will get the question to Kelly and have her answer them for you. And make sure you like and subscribe to this channel so that you never miss an episode of Hashtag No Limits. Bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.